we can probably all agree that the American family is not even close to what it used to be a generation ago. But what happened? On today's episode of Homefront, I share with you some excerpts from a recent radio broadcast I did with Phyllis Schlafly. She invited me to join her on her nationally syndicated call-in show, Eagle Forum Live. You will get to hear some insights from both of us as we discuss her newest book, Who Killed the American Family?
I'm an American! Red, white, and blue.
Welcome to Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host, and I'm here to help. From parenting to public policies to political advice, join me in taking America back one family at a time. As a speaker, writer, former legislator, mother of seven, and wife of one for over 30 years, I bring you my experience.
Don't lose your freedom.
And now it's time for Homefront.
Don't lose your freedom. Let's talk about it.
Why is there a smaller number of Americans living in traditional families than ever before? Why are so many children growing up without a mother and a father married to each other? Today, we're going to discuss some of the answers.
Well, welcome once again to Ego Forum Live with well-known conservative commentator and the author of more than 25 books, Phyllis Schlafly. Ego Forum Live, celebrating 25 years this year, proud to continue the American tradition of news and commentary, bringing you the most important issues of our time. Who Killed the American Family? Another title out from Phyllis Schlafly. Yes, the provocative new book written by Phyllis. It's really talking about America's backbone in the emergency room, or God forbid, the morgue. What can be done? Well, of course, as Phyllis said, we'll have answers coming up, and we'll be looking forward to questions and comments from listeners. And right now, here's Phyllis Schlafly.
And all the answers are in my new book called Who Killed the American Family? The American family is the fundamental American institution, making America stable, successful, and confident. That's the way it was. But today, the busybodies are out to kill it. The American family is under attack. Now, who is responsible? Here to help me answer this question is Cynthia Davis, who was a longtime member of the Missouri State Legislature until she was term limited out. But she's also got a career as a mother and homemaker. She's got seven children, and she's a small business owner, an executive director of the Center for Marriage Policy. Thank you, Cynthia, for coming in today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Phyllis. I appreciate getting to be with you. And I want to ask you a question from the beginning about your book, because I loved the title, I loved the content. But the first thing that got me was I disputed the premise. It said, who killed the American family? And I questioned, is the American family dead? Well, to me, I thought maybe it's not dead. Why would she say such a thing? I've been married for over 34 years. I have seven beautiful, well-adjusted children. I'm happy with my life. My family's intact. Why would you assume it's dead? And then I looked around, and you say in this book that the family, it does affect everybody, whether we're intact or not. Nobody is unaffected. Just like when the World Trade Center went down, everybody in Manhattan was affected. Even if you weren't dead or among those who were compromised to the fullest extent, you had to breathe the fumes. We saw pictures of all the dust, and it hurt everybody. It caused traffic jams.
Well, it does. And when, on the matter of the declining in the number of traditional American families, we're paying the bill. Because a traditional family is an economic unit. They can raise and spend their own money. They don't need any busybody government people telling them how to spend their money or raise their children. But once you take the father away and you encourage the women to have babies without a husband and father around, what are they going to do? They're going to run to Big Brother government, and spending and the government budget just grows and grows and grows. And that's our problem for everybody.
And you talked in the book about Ozzie and Harriet. And let me say, that was a little bit before my time even. I remembered.
But they're still talking about it.
They are.
It's so funny. When I started to fight ERA, I thought we were going to be talking about pay gap and economic issues. And it seemed that what they wanted to kick at all the time was the Ozzie and Harriet family. And, you know, there's still, I have caught on C-SPAN and television this year, the feminists still attacking the Ozzie and Harriet family.
And when I grew up, we could play with neighborhood kids and go off our property. I cannot let my children off my property. They know where the lot line is, and that's about it. Furthermore, if you put your children in public school today, you have to worry about what if your child weaves some crazy story or eats his sandwich into the shape of a gun? Oh. What if he goes to the principal's office and they start asking other questions about them that they can construe? I am so tired of reading stories of the DFS taking children away from normal homeschool families for small reasons. It used to be that we assume that you're innocent, so you're safe. No, we're now at the point where if your child falls and breaks a limb and you go to the emergency room, you have to be prepared to answer questions of, do they think you abused your child?
Yes, that's right. And services, what do they call this agency that takes the kids away?
The Children's Division or the Division of Family Services.
Yes.
Child Protective Services.
They think
services.
They know better how to raise the kids than the parents. And the thing is that people are blaming the gays for the decline in the numbers of family. The statistics are very bad about the decline in the number of traditional families. But as I point out in my book, Who Killed the American Family, they're just one small part. And I have six different chapters on different kinds of people who found it in their interest to kill the American family, to destroy it.
And I found that most interesting because as the executive director for the Center for Marriage Policy, I heard so much about gays and lesbians, and I'm like, wait a minute, that's not marriage. Why are we distracting ourselves? Here's the quote from your book. You wrote this: gays, lesbians, and polygamists have received most of the publicity about the attacks on marriage laws, but they are vastly outnumbered by other groups. And that's the judges, the legislatures, the public policies. There are way more people trying to attack the family than just the people in a decadent lifestyle. We have to look at the big picture. And that's what I love about your book, is you give us a glimpse. We're attacking the wrong enemy. We don't even know what the enemy is.
Yes, the gays are only a small part of that. But take financial incentives. Now, financial incentives are very powerful. And I've got lots of instances in the book where these government people come to the unmarried woman and show her how she's better off with handouts from the government if she doesn't get married. And it just is a tremendous financial incentive. And, of course, I think everybody needs a mission in life. And when a small baby turns up in a woman's arms, she's got her mission right there in front of her. But the father has to have a mission, too. And we've always considered that he's the protector and provider. But if he doesn't have that mission, he's playing on down the street, having fun.
Right. What is he, just a piece of furniture now?
Yeah.
So the problem with government funding is that really is what tipped the scales more than anything else. And the only way to equalize it is to say we're not going to continue spending money to support and encourage. The old expression.
You mean all those 78 different agencies that hand out money and benefits?
Yes. The expression goes that every budget item has a friend. And once you start funding something, it is so hard to say, let's not do it anymore. You will create a firestorm. I tried it once, and I had people pounding on the door of my office at the Capitol saying, hey, what about our money? We are spending money, and they're a little, if you get into your state legislature, you'll find even worse that we in Missouri spend a portion of the marriage license fee to fund domestic violence shelters. Well, most people don't ask when they're getting their marriage license, but what we're doing is encouraging and supporting a whole nother industry, and you get more of what you subsidize.
That's perfectly true, and the decline in the numbers of American family is directly related to the amount of money we're putting in to making it more profitable money-wise for women to have babies without a husband. And sometimes they'll tell them that, well, if you get married, that we'll cut off some of these benefits. And that's a powerful incentive. But the book is Who Killed the American Family? And there are a lot of other causes for it that we'll discuss on the program. And I certainly thank Representative Cynthia Davis for joining us today.
Once again, here's Phyllis.
And that's our question, who killed the American family? And I compare it to the Agatha Christie murder mystery where they were trying to find the criminal, and it turned out that everybody on the train had a motive for the crime. And so we have a lot of different people with motives. It's not just the gays. It's also the feminists. It's the judges. It's the people who are giving incentives to unmarried people as opposed to married people. And I detail them in the book. And here to join me in discussing this is Representative Cynthia Davis, former member of the Missouri legislature till she was term limited out. I think you're too young for that. Yeah. Anyway, she's out, so she's available for good things like this program. And you read the book, Cynthia?
I loved it. And, you know, you mentioned Murder on the Orient Express by Agatha Christie. And I applaud all the people who like to read fiction, but there's too much nonfiction going on that sometimes is even more bizarre. So going to your theme of who did it, we are in a perfect storm, and the problem is we don't know how to defend ourselves. The left has had a plan for destroying us, the family, and we sat back trying to be nice people all this time.
Well, the feminists, for example, think men are irrelevant. And you don't need to pay any attention to them. They're not necessary. They want to overturn the patriarchy, which is what they say.
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever had your children in public school, or did you homeschool them the whole time?
No, I never had them in public school. I went to public school myself for a couple of years. The thing about education is I taught them all how to read before they went to school. Because I think the biggest sin in the public education system is they don't teach them how to read. Going through 12 years of school and never learning how to read. And I wrote First Reader, which is the best way to teach a child to read. And I taught them how to read, and then I entered them directly in a parochial school in the second grade.
Well, I taught my kids also as best I could, but I did try the public school first to see what was going to happen. And when this is just a parallel illustration of what's happened to the home. I taught my children you don't hit, don't punch, don't kick, don't use bad words, always be nice, be nice, be nice. So then my kids got to school, and they were nice, and my son was getting beaten up in the boys' bathroom every day. And he's in fourth grade, and I talked to the principal, and he said unless they see blood or broken bones, they're not going to address it. So then I decided my son is not a punching bag. I'm taking him out. Now, what I'm saying is we in the conservative movement have been so nice. We've tried to be nice, and we didn't want to attribute ill motives to all these other institutions trying to harm the family. So when they punched us, we ended up being kicked in the teeth and knocked down, and we kept being nice back. And meanwhile, we've lost our freedoms and our rights. And let me say something about the funding mechanism that we were on before the break. You have a beautiful quote in your book You say from 1948 until the 1970s, the incentives favored marriage and children raised by married couples. The incentives are now the wrong direction, against marriage. The income tax system doesn't even require the single mom to report the income of her live-in boyfriend. There is no such thing as a neutral tax policy. And I want to say our tax policy is part of what's killing Americans. Michelle Obama was recently, a few months ago, speaking at a women's conference about how important it is to have quality daycare. And you notice they always use the word quality daycare as opposed to what? They don't even know. They know. The only quality daycare is really for moms and dads to raise their own kids. But then she went on to tell her story about how paying for full-time babysitting for her children was a financial loss, even though she made more money through her husband than what most women make. And her quote was, "We lost our babysitter, which was probably the worst time of my motherhood. I was so devastated." I thought, I can think of a lot of things more devastating to a parent than losing your babysitter.
Well, of course, the Obama administration wants all kids in daycare, and that's what the feminists have tried for years. That was one of their four hot-button issues when they had that big gathering in Houston back in the 1970s. Recently, you know, Obama made one of his campaign speeches. I think it was in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And what he said was, women should not have the choice to stay. They use the word choice. To stay home with their children because they need to be in daycare. And, of course, that means the mother's got to have a job and pay taxes in order to finance all these handouts.
And in your book, you went on to say, rightly so, in any legislative body, you can get pretty much anything you want if you wrap it in children and then say it's for the children. And I say that's hogwash because I saw it. That was the Trump card. When anybody wanted anything financial to pass in the Missouri House of Representatives, all you had to do is stand up and say it's for the children. And then people were embarrassed to vote against it because they couldn't imagine why I would want that on my record.
Well, these handouts have not helped the family. They have made the families more dependent on government, and that's not what we want.
We've got a lot of callers here, ladies. Barbara in St. Louis joins us here on Eagle Forum Live, listening to Bot Radio Network.
Hi, Barbara.
Yes, I'm Phyllis with you, your age and that, so I've been around a few days, and I would try to teach my grandchildren or my great-grandchildren, they're afraid to spank their children, afraid that they'll get in trouble by the government. What can we do about this serious, serious condition?
Got an answer to that, Cynthia Davis?
It's pretty scary anymore today. My recommendation is that we've had to now be relegated. I shouldn't have to keep my children in my house during school hours for fear that somebody will see them and think they're not being educated. But we have got so many people nosy and trying to figure out. We're in a different dynamic. And this is what Phyllis is talking about.
And Child Protective Services acts on anonymous tips.
They do, and with no accountability.
No accountability.
You'll never know who's complaining about you. But this is the point Phyllis made, that it is affecting all of us. Don't just think my nice family is immune from all the harm. Yeah, there are problems. There are big problems. There's a storm going on, and it's time for all of us to take cover.
1-800-736-3202. Susan checks in from Wichita, Kansas, Phyllis.
Hi, Susan.
Hi. I have been thinking, something doesn't come free all the time from the government. And with the hookup generation that is, you know, encouraged to not get married because they can get more benefits with children and stuff by not being married, at what point do you think it's going to catch them? I know I've got some people in my own family that are in that situation. I just wonder, you know, it can't continue like this, but at the same time, makes me wonder, at what point do you think that they're going to get caught in it? You know what I'm saying?
What do you think about that, Cynthia? The government policies are really so against marriage. They have provide incentives and discouragements to marriage, and then the money that goes along with it.
And the we've lost our problems, really starting with the book, The Scarlet Letter. You say even in the book, social acceptance for adultery and illegitimacy now is the norm. So we're at a point where you don't even dare. I think about all the elected officials who live in a moral cesspool themselves, and you're not allowed to bring that up. That's off topic. That started when Bill Clinton was in the White House and doing despicable things with Monica Lewinsky. And we got this new ethic that you're not allowed to say anything about people's moral background because, after all, what matters is what you see on the surface. And this has caused a lot of harm because we're not allowed to talk about morality anymore.
Well, I want to talk about another cause, another group of people who've been killing the American family, and that is the family court judges. I think they're a major factor. You know, the expression, the best interest of the child, came down to us from English law. And it originally meant that the parents, the kid's own parents, are the ones best situated to decide what is the best interest of the child. But now it's the judges. And the judges can overrule parents on anything. And it doesn't make any difference what the parents want. And once there is a breakup of marriage and you go in a divorce court and you're in family court, the judge decides everything. How many hours a day you can see your own children, how much money you have to spend, what house you can live in. We even had one of these judges recently deciding who got the family dog based on the best interest of the dog. And the judges can't be second-guessed.
It's even getting worse than that because I have a constituent contacted me because she was in a contentious divorce, and the judge ordered the child into foster care. Now, that's not the appropriate use of foster care. Foster care is only for abuse and neglect. It's not for if your parents don't get along. But the judge ordered the child into foster care, ordered the parents to pay for the guardian ad litem and all the expenses that go with foster care. And what the judge effectively has done is turned our system on its head, disrespecting the rules and how we govern ourselves. We are treated like we don't know how to even raise our children anymore. Once it goes to court, it's a coin flip if you're going to get justice.
But the authority is in the judge. It's no longer in the parent. And we should respect parents' rights because they are the ones who know what is in the best interest of the child, not the judge. And he has no criteria, no law to guide him. It's just whatever he thinks.
And it's to the point where the schools don't know what to do either. One thing I loved in your book, you say it's unfortunate that most churches have neglected their duty to remind their flocks of God's plan for marriage and children and to emphasize the crucial importance of the nuclear family. So why are the preachers so silent about the essential morality of marriage and the immorality of its redefinition?
Well, I think they're afraid of the feminists.
The supremacist judges are the ones who are taking now the role that the church used to take.
That's the voice of Cynthia Davis, Phyllis Schlafly's guest today here on Eagle Forum Live. You know, Hillary Clinton famously said it takes a village to raise a child, but she forgot that it takes a family to raise a village. Without strong families, can we hope for strong villages in our future? History certainly says no, but if we build a culture of strong families, the future could be bright.
And our guest today is former Missouri Representative Cynthia Davis, who set up a great record in the Missouri legislature and then was term limited out. That's too bad about that. And before we went to the break, we were talking about the left-wing attempt to say the village should raise the child. Now, we need to understand that when they use the term village, that's a synonym for government. And they want government to be in charge and the judges to be in charge, not parents. And I think that's so unfortunate. It's a big takeaway of parents' rights. Is that what you find in the breakup of families, Cynthia?
Yeah, and what I loved about your book is you explained the Ninth Circuit Court ruled that parents' right to control the upbringing of their children does not extend beyond the threshold of the school door. And we've got so much intervention going on now that even the good intact families don't have any peace and safety and confidentiality.
Well, that's to keep parents from having anything to say about curriculum in the schools. And we do think parents should be in charge of the education of their children, but the schools don't agree with that, as you pointed out.
You have a chapter in the book called Experts Mock the Family.
Yeah.
And I love that.
The experts are the worst.
They are. So here's what's going on. The public schools used to be more capable than they are today. My favorite part of the whole book was when you told the story about the book the NEA published. The NEA, hooray, yeehaw! They published a book, and I know most of our listeners don't take time to applaud the NEA, but they deserve applause for this. They wrote a book called The American Citizen's Handbook. It was published in 1941 and then republished in 1951. And you say in the book that the handbook contained the Old Testament, New Testament passages, the Ten Commandments, the Lord's Prayer, the Golden Rule, the Boy Scout Oath, and patriotic songs. A quote from the handbook says this: "It is important that people who are to live and work together shall have a common mind and a like heritage of purpose, religious ideals, love of country, beauty, wisdom, and guide to inspire them." So why can't the public schools teach stuff like this today? If they did, we wouldn't have so many
problems.
Well,
that was 25 years ago, and it's sure not like that today.
I asked my son at the dinner table last night, "Matt, what do you think killed the American family?" And he spontaneously said the public schools. It's one of the fronts we're on, and I have to say, if the NEA would go back to what they printed back in the 1940s and 50s, we would have a little more morality being taught.
Oh, but that's not politically correct anymore.
Well, look at what we're reaping today. We are now at a point where we're looking at the family, and I love everything you're doing with the book trying to explain it.
That's the voice of Cynthia Davis, the guest of Phyllis Schlafly. Hey, Phyllis, say hello to Tammy.
Hi, Tammy. Welcome.
Hi, Phyllis. Thank you for taking my call, and I love your book, Who Killed the American Family. It's spot on. I would have just two quick comments. No-fault divorce has to be one of the worst pieces of legislation.
Well, I tell about that in the book.
You do, and I really appreciate that. And unfortunately, I'm in the social work arena. And as a conservative, I feel a little bit anymore like I'm behind some enemy lines, because I sit in meetings where social workers are gathered around from various agencies, and this is just one county, where they're talking about how to put these families, these single mother families, and most of them, I haven't met yet one single parent that's a father, how we can get more services to them. And these people working in this system don't even appreciate how destructive their agencies are to our culture by keeping on promoting the shamelessness that they want to put on these mothers that have multiple children, multiple men, never married, but they're all concerned about getting them services, a huge taxpayer burden. And nobody seems to see the elephant in the room that says, you know, 40 years ago, it used to be, number one, shameful to have a child out of wedlock, and number two, the natural law, the natural order of how God orchestrated things, they need a father. And I have suggested we need to get husbands for these women, and I don't get ushered out the door, but I know they'd like me to leave. And so I think we need to maybe be brave enough to start standing up and pointing out the obvious.
Well, thank you, Tammy, for your great comment. And I hope listeners to this program will take this program to their pastor and get their pastor on the ball to talk up the importance of staying together in the nuclear family, because that should be the basis of our society.
Let's see what Lonnie has on mind from North Platte, Nebraska, Phyllis.
Hi, Ronnie.
Hello, Lonnie. Hey. Go ahead, Lonnie.
Hello there. How are you today?
Good. Go ahead.
Great topic. Near and dear to my heart. I think the one thing you got to point out is that Social Security Title IV, Paragraph D, the reason the judges do what they do with respect to the alimony, child support, so forth and so on, in my county here in Lincoln County, Nebraska, the husband and father is absolutely impoverished. And the reason is that with Title IV, Paragraph D, the judges actually get money put into their pockets for doing this.
For doing what?
They also get disadvantages to fathers.
Well, they're trying to...
The other thing that's an important part of what I wanted to cover has to do with the economic rewards of what goes on in this situation, and that is that when a woman gets married, has a child, gets a divorce, she gets to collect alimony, child support, plus state and federal aid. Yet then, as she increases the number of men in her life and has other children, she maximizes the child support. She only has one child per man. And then the second half of the fourth source of income then becomes the individual that she's presently involved with. And I just think that it is...
And she doesn't have to report that. She can have a live-in boyfriend, and she doesn't have to report the income.
It is really a financial boon.
Have you found that to be so, Cynthia?
They're trying to punish the men by extracting the maximum amount from them. But more importantly than that, people are confused about what the public should pay for. And people in both Republican and Democrat parties tend to be in love with socialism on the sense that we have to pay for all these babies. When we were discussing a pro-life bill in our caucus, the Republican caucus of the Missouri House, the question came up, well, if more people have babies, then who's going to pay for all these babies? The state surely can't afford to pay for them. So then the question became, are we being consistently pro-life if we want to not have abortion, but we're not going to pay for all these extra babies?
Well, but they want them to pay for the abortion, and we don't want them to do that.
Eagle Forum Live to Belleville, Illinois, to talk to Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, Phyllis. I just wanted to say that we're in a society where the children that are having children have not been raised themselves. And it's a hard situation to know. I'm a great-grandmother, and I'm trying to help with my great-grandchildren. But it's hard because they go back home, and they live in an atmosphere of infancy. I mean, the parents have not grown up to know what's right and wrong for their children. And it breaks my heart. And the school can't do much. You know, they can only go so far.
Yeah, we're in the second and third generation of this breakup of the family.
Mary, let me respond to that, too. Phyllis has a spot in her book where she quotes the London Daily Mail British family lawyer. And he says this, we live in a world where we are encouraged to take care of our own children's health. We are constantly admonished to take exercise, eat healthily, wear a motorcycle helmet or a bicycle helmet, study the side of the package, stop smoking, recycle, combat global warming, brush our teeth, control our drinking habits, and have health checks. But when it comes to the one issue that does more harm to the next generation than any of these, the absence of a father in the family, there is a conspiracy of silence. So maybe instead of teaching sex education, we should teach marriage education. We need to get them installed with a program. Hey, how come we're not embarrassed to tell people they have to brush their teeth?
Or how to nourish your children. They need the love and the companionship of a parent. And when they're not there, or when they are there, they're not doing their job. They're not reaching out to their child. They're just setting them in front of a TV or a video game.
Well, who made the decision that morality is off limits? Because that's the problem. We're raising a generation of children who don't know what's right or wrong anymore. Or we've skewed what's right and wrong. Now, if you don't recycle, that's a moral ill.
Right. Well, I've tried to take my little six-year-old to church, and he really liked it and wanted to go. But lately, he says, I'm never going. And it breaks my heart because I don't know where he's coming from, what's happened in his life that makes him feel that church isn't helping him.
Well, Phyllis wrote this in her book, when will we start teaching students that the moral lifestyle is the best route to raise out of poverty and eventually achieve the American dream. That's it right there.
Well, the new evidence coming out of the schools is what is the reason for the gap between the high achieving and the low achieving? And they used to think it was just poverty. It was a matter of dollars and cents. But new evidence shows it's the difference between the ones who are raised by a mother and father and those who are not. So that's the big difference in the gap. We've spent all these billions of dollars to so-called close the gap. We've been talking about the book, Who Killed the American Family? You need to read it in order to find out all the different kinds of people who had a vested interest in killing the American family, which they've killed a large percentage of them. And Who Killed the American Family is the title of my new book. Nobody else has tried to answer that question. They all deplore the reduction in the number of married people, but you need to know what caused it and what we can do about it. And my guest today, Cynthia Davis, is a former Missouri State Representative. And Cynthia and I both have intact families. Cynthia's got 7 children. I've got 6. And it's a great lifestyle. I like it. And I like taking care of my own babies. But at any rate, tell us what you think we can do about it.
Well, the happiest end of the story is your last chapter, The Way Home. We can fix this. We don't have to take it. We can be brave and strong and push back, and we must push back because we owe it to the next generation. One of the most frustrating times I had in the Missouri House was the women would get together and say, we need more women in the legislature. And I would say, no, don't send us just women. It's what kind of women? They'd better be smart and articulate and speak the truth, because otherwise having more women is no different than being racist. You can't judge people by the outside. You have to judge
Well, the country with the highest number of women is Cuba, so I suggest they move to Cuba.
There you go. That's how it's done, apparently. I read that in your book, and we need to be more intelligent than this. You say that the feminist goal is not fair or equal treatment of women, but gender interchangeability.
That's right. Now, think about that. They think there isn't any difference between men and women. Now, you've had babies. I had 4 boys first, and then I had a girl, and I thought I had an invalid. All she did was lie there in the cradle, and she didn't thrash around like the boys. And anybody who's got children can see the difference from the very beginning.
And I believe the first time I went to a women legislator conference of this, most of them are dominated by Democrats because most of the women legislators are Democrats. But I went to an Eagle Forum, Eagle Council, and one of my friends there said, now when you go, don't wear any makeup and get a real sour attitude and hate men and you'll blend in just fine. So, but what I found out is women do like dressing nice. Women do generally like to focus on different things. We are wired different, and it's important not to let them interchange us with anyone else. It's important for us to be smart and intelligent and push for the things that we care about. Women want to love their children, and women deep down inside want to take care of them. I remember while I was in the Missouri House, I criticized a program that was feeding children outside the home in an institutionalized setting. And my reward for that was I was called the worst person in the world on national network TV. Because they consider that the third rail of politics. You don't ever criticize any program that takes care of children. But why don't we? Why aren't the mothers pulling our kids back and say, no, you're not going to take my kids?
Well, the feminists are very much opposed to mothers taking care of their own babies. They think the government ought to do that. And they tell young women that it's a demeaning task for an educated woman to just take care of children. And even Obama made a political speech before this last election saying women should not have the choice, he used the word choice, to stay home and take care of their children. We need them in the workforce. That's where they will pay the taxes and be able to support more government programs.
His exact words were, this is not a choice we want them to make.
Yes.
Which should offend every woman, regardless of what you want. We want to reserve the right. Now, one thing, I had several conversations with the bill drafting attorneys at, in the Missouri House, and they were instructed to, anytime a section of law is open, make sure instead of saying him, we make it him or her, and take out all references that would be masculine. But the point is, we have to be brave enough to take control of our destiny, take control of our kids, take control of our families, and push back when it's appropriate. Because when the fog comes down, it covers all of us. Somebody's got to help blow the clouds away, and I appreciate you writing the book to help people figure out how to do that.
Steve in Denver, Colorado wants to join us here on Eagle Forum Live. Go right ahead, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Hi. See, I was just struck by the similarities of what you're saying about kids is with the elderly being treated like the government collateral. You know, like I was taking care of my dad and the social workers and the the physician and even the police just swarmed in and, you know, took over him and used the court to take over him and his care, and there's other families that, you know, we've started a coalition and they're just killing the family that way too.
Well, thank you for your call. I didn't realize it was going that far, but it certainly is true that these people want the government to take over the family, and it's when the family is in a social and economic integral unit that we can have a free America.
The point is that it's who's in charge. Who is going to be the ultimate authority? If you let the judges and the bureaucracies control who gets to call the shots, we're going to lose it and we'll never get it back again.
And up there, they even take over the estates. The probate system's a mess, and they take over the estates so these court-appointed guardians and conservators can take control of the elderly.
Yeah, well, they do that to the children. They appoint somebody to take care of the children and look to, and make the decisions for the children so that the when the custody is given to the mother, the father doesn't have any say-so about support for the child and what it can do and not to. And parents should make the decisions about the best interest of the child. And that goes all the way from important to decisions like where they go to school or church and whether they play soccer or baseball. Should be a parental decision, and yet the liberals and the Obamaites want the government to take that over.
Thank you, Steve. Let's see what Patrick wants to talk about here on Ego Forum Live. Welcome from Fort Wayne, Indiana, Patrick.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi, thank you. The basis of all this is words, and we've allowed the Democrats, the left, to change words. As far as marriage goes, they say marriage can be anything between anybody.
Any roommates.
The Bible says, God says, go forth and multiply, and only a man and a woman can do that. There can be same-sex unions, but same-sex marriage is not the same, and nobody says marriage is the cradle of the family. He says go forth and multiply, and same-sex people can't do that.
Let me help you correct your vocabulary. Don't call it same-sex marriage. It's not marriage. It's not marriage. It's an abomination. If it's same-sex, it's a registry of friends, if they want to.
Roommates.
Yeah, call them roommates, but do not call it marriage. You can only restrict yourself, and I do this for myself. I don't call it marriage unless it's between a man and a woman.
Well, that's a good lesson for us, Cynthia. Cynthia is a former state legislator. She's been used to dealing with legislation, but the courts have taken over, or they're trying to take over the definition of marriage. And I don't think we ought to let them do it. The idea that marriage definition could be overturned from the way we've had it for millennia by a couple of judges on some high court is just simply not an acceptable situation.
A number of callers biting at the bit here to join the conversation, including Gene in St. Louis, listening to BRN.
Hello, Gene. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Just two quick comments. When I taught public school education, I had an open door policy. Cynthia, if your kid was in my room, you were welcome in. And I received flack, not only from the principal and the superintendent's office, but also from the union teachers. But if you have a child in public school, there should be an open door policy. My second comment, and then I'll hang up. I had a former neighbor who is a single mom. She has two elementary age kids. She refused benefits through her employer because she could get state funded insurance because her kids get DFS. They get welfare. And I find that repulsive. If you work, pay your own way. Thank you. Bye.
Well, thank you very much, Jean, for your comment. I'm sorry we're out of time. But it's been a very interesting interview about my new book, Who Killed the American Family?
Every week you can stay up to date on the most important issues of concern to you and your family. Join Phyllis right here on Eagle Forum Live. And of course, 24/7, join Phyllis online at eagleforum.org. Past articles, past radio programs, you can even buy her a new book there. So we invite you to join Phyllis Schlafly at eagleforum.org. Again, eagleforum.org. This radio program is indeed a presentation of Eagle Forum.